Welcome to Wynn Tucson on this Monday of Thanksgiving week. It is going to be a week that we are here just 3 days with the best of performances on Thursday and Friday. Please do tune in on those days, but we won't really be here. So we've got a lot to cram in the next 3 days. And I thought what a great week to let people know what we're thankful for, what we've got going on, and some news. And I'm so happy to be joined today by Nicola Hartman, who is oh my goodness, here I am. It is Monday all day. Nicola helps run our, Nicola?
Sister Jose Women's Center.
Yes, you do. It was right there, and then my phone went blank. Sister Jose's Women's Center. And I've been down there, and it is incredible the work that you're doing. And you are helping people get off the street, rebuild their lives. And I'd like you to tell what my listeners and the community can do to support you.
Wonderful. So we are seeing a lot of unhoused women, more than ever before. And I keep on saying that, but it is a little shocking. Last week, last Thursday, we saw 117 women
in
3 hours, in the morning.
Oh my Lord.
And it used to be we'd see 60, and then when it grew exponentially, it was 80. And we were thinking, you know, we've been looking at our financials and thinking, wow, we're spending a lot of money on food and supplies, you know, cups and bowls and cereal. And now I know why. It's we're serving so many more women. And the one thing we always make sure is that our guests can have, you know, a warm meal and leave with their bellies full.
Yes.
And that's really important. So just seeing a lot more women who are really having a tough time out there.
And we just heard through the news story that there's an increase of people coming into this country. Are you seeing illegal immigrants? Do you know? Or
we don't tend to see a lot of immigrants coming to the center. We don't ask people,
right.
But just in terms of who we're seeing, these are our neighbors. These are people who've been living here for a long time. So we really don't tend to see immigrants.
And people ask me that question. I've worked in the homeless arena since my late 20s, I guess, with the Hearth Foundation, and was part of that when they started New Beginnings. So I know what a critical issue this is. What's driving this, though? What is it? Is it inflation? Is it the community? What is causing more people to be homeless at this time?
I think the cost of everything is impacting people. So housing is the top one. I mean, again and again, people come to us saying, my rent went up $200, $400, and they were already living close to the edge. You know, older women on fixed incomes, limited Social Security, and they just can't make it. And so all of a sudden, they've spent every little bit of savings they had. They thought they were going to be okay, and they're just on the street. We also see, you know, victims of trafficking. Yes. We see a lot of, unfortunately, abuse. And a lot of our guests have mental health challenges. And I think that is the one thing I had no concept of before I became involved with Sister Jose, was the level of mental health challenges that these poor women have. They should be receiving help. They shouldn't be on the street.
Absolutely. What do we do to support you?
Well, we obviously always accept donations, and that can be, you know, obviously financial gifts. We're eligible for the state tax credit, so that is a huge support. But, you know, a lot of people want to give things.
Yes.
So they can give things that they've kind of recycled from their closet, you know, blankets, jackets. You know, it's the time of year where we're switching to needing, you know, sweatshirts and coats.
Socks.
And then new underwear. We only take new underwear and new socks.
Yes.
Everything else can be recycled. You know, people can donate, you know, boxes of cereal or fruit. We give away a lot of pop-top cans for women on the street, where we don't serve breakfast and lunch on Sundays. So on Saturdays, we try to give our guests that visit a little bit extra so they have, you know.
So on Friday, they'll get something, yeah.
A little bit extra. But those pop-top cans of fruit and protein are really helpful, too, for people who want to give something.
That's wonderful. And how do they reach you, or how do they get to you?
Well, we are located on 22nd and Park, so we're at 1050 South Park Avenue. So they can come by the center. If they want to learn more about us, they can visit us at sisterjose.org. And Jose is J-O-S-E.
Yes.
And so they can come and support us that way with items or by visiting the website to learn more.
Are your guests all ages?
They are. So we accept women and their pets. So they have to be.
I saw several dogs when I was there.
Dogs, cats, bunnies.
Yeah. Oh, good. Oh, I heard. Did you have a rooster?
We had a rooster once. Luckily, he didn't spend the night,
okay.
Which was good.
He was just in and out. When I saw several women on the bed with their pets, and I think they were dogs. I think they were both dogs. But you could tell that was comforting, and it made me smile that they got to keep their pets, because a lot of times when you're homeless, you don't.
Well,
that's
such a big part of it. Women will stay on the street if they can't have their pet with them. And, you know, we've had, you know, we have cats. So we've had women come to our center, especially, you know, you're asking how old. We've had an 86-year-old woman. That's probably the oldest woman we've had since I've been there. You know, but she had had her cat of, you know, 10 years that, you know, she loved and adored. And if she hadn't been able to bring her cat,
she would have stayed
on the street. And she had never been on the street before. So that is really, really difficult. And so by being able to welcome pets, we're able to welcome more women.
And I know that there's groups all over the city that are raising money. And that's how I found out about you, through one of those women's groups. And I think you're doing a great job of getting the word out.
Thank you.
And it is a hard job. It really is, to see so many people in crisis. But you guys, from the moment that they walk in the door, you take such good care of them, and you are doing really God's work. And just really appreciate the work that you're doing. So give us the website one more time.
Sisterjose.org. And then Jose is J-O-S-E.
Okay.
And exactly. I think we're a center of love, and we try to welcome everybody and you know, show compassion, dignity, and respect.
Well, Nicola, how long have you been there? How long have you been the director?
So I've been the CEO for about maybe 6 months, and I've been at the center about a year and a half, over a year and a half.
Well, I will tell you that since you've been there, I have heard nothing but great things. Oh. And thank you for stepping into this role at a critical time, not only in Tucson, but in the country, because this is an issue. And I think you're doing everything you can to make it easier for those that are struggling, and to give them the support they need to get back on their feet, and to get them to the services that they're also entitled to. So we really appreciate the work that you're doing, and we are thankful for you and the work that is being done. And if you are hearing this and you've got extra jackets or sweaters or things you haven't worn in 5 years, if you haven't worn it in 5 years, you don't need it anymore, take it down to Sister Jose's center at Park and 22nd.
Correct. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Well, we're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to Corey Stevens, who's running for Maricopa County Supervisor. Maybe she can fix some of these problems. This is Kathleen Wynn. And this is Wynn Tucson on 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. Stay with us. Welcome back to Wynn Tucson. This is Kathleen Wynn, and I just need to apologize. My phone blew up. Pima County. I lived in Maricopa too long, and by the way, they need help up there too, and you'd probably make a great supervisor wherever you were, Corey Stevens. So welcome to the show, and it's great to have you in studio, and thank you for taking on Dr. Matt Hines, right?
Okay.
It's time he retires, right?
Right. We have to... we have to send him back on a cruise. I think that's the most appropriate place to send him.
Yes, yes. I think he's worked hard. I think it's time that he just...
Right.
And he's got all those extra jobs.
He does. You know, Board of Supervisors really is his last priority. Previous meeting, I guess it was two meetings ago, he secured himself two liquor licenses, and so he now is in the restaurant business. So Board of Supervisors is his third priority. You know, he's a hospitalist.
Yes.
He's now a restaurateur. And
a Board of Supervisors.
And a Board of Supervisors. So that is his last priority. So
is the Pima County Board of Supervisors in their accountabilities,
mm-hmm.
is it a full-time job?
It is a full-time job. So he certainly, you know, by all accounts, he shows up late, he leaves early, he certainly makes this his last priority. So...
So what would you do? What are you going to do differently when elected?
When elected, that's going to be my only job, first and foremost. I'm a small business owner, and I would give that up. And the citizens of Pima County will be my first priority, my only priority. So that in and of itself is what a supervisor's first priority needs to be, is serving the citizens and constituents of their district, not your last priority. So my priorities are fiscal conservatism.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a constitutional, you know, conservative. We need to make that priority one. We have an overinflated budget. We have crime. We have, as our last guest said, we have a homeless crisis.
Yes.
So we need to fix that situation.
Can you imagine 100? And I think she said 173 people in 3 hours.
Right.
And getting services.
And right. And the thing of it is, Kathleen, is that we have ample services here in Pima County that aren't being, you know, taken advantage of. And when you look at the homeless crisis, homeless people are not accounted for unless they are in a shelter.
Correct.
So we have, homeless encampments here in Pima County, and those people are unaccounted for. And the problem is that we are not empowering our law enforcement to handle those situations. And the underlying causes of homelessness are drug abuse and mental illness. And until we address those situations, we cannot get a grasp of what's going on in those homeless encampments.
And to your point about law enforcement, we continue to have not enough officers.
Correct.
Or in the case of Pima County, enough deputies.
Correct. And we can blame the Pima County Board of Supervisors for that situation. What went on during COVID was an egregious overreach of authority, in my estimation. We had a countywide initiative to force vaccination. And that should have been a matter of choice. And so what happened specifically with...
My body, my choice.
And so what happened in specifically with, you know, the sheriff's department, with on the correction side, we had, we lost a lot of people. And on corrections, we had to hire those people back and pay them back pay. And we lost a lot of good corrections officers, deputies, And so we're understaffed, and that contributed to an overinflated budget.
So correction officers,
mm-hmm.
what's happening in the county jail, the number of deaths, is right. that a Pima County supervisor problem?
It does come back to the Board of Supervisors. It certainly does, because we have a purview of authority. We ultimately are responsible for their budget. When a death occurs in the Pima County Jail, ultimately, if the county is sued, that comes out of the taxpayers' money. So ultimately, that responsibility kind of comes back to us. And we need to be accountable for making sure that the sheriff does his job and does it well. And we need to hire a sheriff who, is fiscally responsible. I'd like to see a closed border sheriff myself.
Yes.
And I would like to see a sheriff who is empowering our law enforcement officers to do their job and to protect our citizens. And first and foremost, protect his officers.
I think that's a mouthful. It's important because so many of the issues that we have in Pima County could be, if we enforce the laws, if we prosecuted people, you've got a prosecutor problem too.
Correct.
And all these jobs are up for election. Mm-hmm. And if you really, I'm disappointed with the city elections, but I have to give the team that ran a lot of props. But we can't, Pima County's got to be the line where we have to flip those seats, and we have to, Pima County's bigger than the city of Tucson.
Yes.
And we have to restore fiscal conservative policies.
We do.
Law enforcement, mm-hmm. prosecution, and the supervisors have to manage the dollars that come into Pima County responsibly, because there's not a bottomless pit of money.
There's not. And we have a $2 billion budget at the county level. And that to me is egregious. Steve Spain and myself have said that anything that grows the county budget irresponsibly, we are hard no on.
Yes.
We need to put more money back into the taxpayers' wallets. That's just the bottom line. We are here to serve the citizens of Pima County, and we cannot spend, like drunken sailors. It's got to stop. And the county administrator is basically a Chuck Huckleberry 2.0, and we have more liabilities than we do resources at this point. And we need to have a fiscal audit going forward. And that's the bottom line.
You can spend and spend and spend, but ultimately those bills come due. And so what you're doing is you're creating a shortfall for the future.
Correct.
At a time when we need more resources, not less, on the everyday problems.
Right.
Sharon Bronson has announced her retirement.
She has.
And so is there anyone running in that seat?
No, we are trying to convince a certain someone to step forward.
Okay.
And I think the more that we...
Talk to this person,
we might be able to convince her to come and join our...
I love it.
...our slate.
I won't say who I think it is, but I am thrilled to hear that.
Yes.
And what about... we've got Steve Christie running mm-hmm. again. You and Steve Spain.
Correct.
And Steve ran before and came very close, correct?
He did. He was within a very small margin of taking that seat. And he and I have been out there and, talking to groups of people, and we're working hard to take back Pima County. So
Well, I think that's great. So how is the campaign going so far?
It's going quite amazing, in fact. Everybody that I speak to is excited about the things that we are working hard to accomplish. And we have great ideas on how we're going to, you know, change Pima County and, you know, the fiscal conservatism, plans to, you know, reduce crime, you know, work on the homeless situation and just really, you know, make things better for the working people, the hardworking citizens of Pima County. You know, I am from Pima County.
Yeah.
I was born in Arizona. I grew up in Tucson and, you know, I'm from here. And the Tucson that I grew up in is not the Tucson that I know and love.
Yeah. No, it's a mess. How do people reach you? How do they support you?
I have my website, which is Beatrice4PimaBOS, and I cannot win this without your support. I need money and I need, you know, you to get on there and sign my petition to get me into office.
And we can retire Dr. Matt Hines.
We got to send him back on that cruise.
I want to say thank you for coming in and happy Thanksgiving, and we will have you back.
Thank you, Kathleen. Later. I love you.
Ah, you're the best. And happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there, because we're going to celebrate this week. We will have you back, because I this isn't enough time. But thank you, Corey, for coming in.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Win Tucson. It has been a busy morning, which I love on a Monday, on a holiday week. And I am happy to welcome to the show Pam Lightsey. Pam lives in Georgia. She's the Georgia Federation of Republican Women president. I have had the pleasure of working with her on anti-trafficking. And we both got to work with former First Lady Rosalynn Carter, and as we all know, she passed away yesterday, and I invited Pam on to give some thoughts as a Georgian. And I also have met Rosalynn Carter 33 years ago for the first time in person, and had dinner with her and her husband, but got to work with her most recently in 2015 with a joint effort with Pam, the Rotarians, and we put on a world summit. So Pam, welcome to Win Tucson, and thank you for taking the time this morning.
Thank you for having me, Kathleen. It's always good to be here. A little bit of home in Georgia.
And full disclosure, Pam is the daughter of Gail Griffin, our state representative, so all worlds colliding. Rosalynn Carter died yesterday at the age of 96. Her and Jimmy Carter were married 77 years. I think that's incredible. She passed away in her home in Plains, Georgia, which I have been in. And she's survived by her husband, 4 children, 22 grandchildren, and great-grandchildren, and a legacy of mental health advocacy, human rights, civil rights, and her husband, who is 99, is also in hospice care. So I just, my heart and my prayers go out to Rosalynn Carter. And what can you tell us as a Georgian, how was Rosalynn perceived? How she contributed so much. She was such a loyal and faithful spouse and wife and a kind soul.
I would have to say, you know, the positive that the Carters always brought was the humanitarian efforts that they led. And, you know, they were definitely, and he still continues, you know, is God-fearing. And so, you know, they were Christians, and so I have no doubt when she hit those pearly gates that, you know, she was greeted with well done, faithful servant. She was definitely a servant of God and her Christian, and the love for her community, for her family, for her husband, and was shown in everything that she did.
Absolutely. And she loved her family. She loved her children, her grandchildren. I know that they brought her great joy. In 2015, when you and I worked together, it was a world summit to end sex trafficking, sexual exploitation by 2025. And it was a monumental event, and I got to sit next to her. And I think President Carter was really excited to have this many. There were a couple hundred people there in the Carter Center. And it was through the efforts of your Rotary group. I just got to help organize and come along. But it was really through their generosity that we got to be there. And I think it's one of these issues, Pam, that doesn't have or shouldn't have a political face. And it felt good back then in 2015, which seems like a decade. Well, it is almost a decade ago, I guess. That we could do that. I don't think we could do that in this day and age right now, given the hyper politicization of everything. And yet the bad guys don't care how we vote. Are you there?
I am. You cut out for a minute.
Oh, no, I said the bad guys don't care how we vote. And I think this was a unique time where we could come together, all sides, and do some great work. There was a 3-year plan, a 5-year plan, and a 10-year plan that went to the United Nations. And I thought that a lot of great work got done. And it was because of the Carters that we could do that work.
Well, she was definitely a passion to make sure that, you know, her love for women and children, not to be victims of this horrific crime, was one of her passions, as well as mental health. The love that of family, and how that was destroyed by what happens with human trafficking and how it's exploited, was one of those things that she wanted to make sure there was a plan to get rid of. You know, we have not gotten rid of it. I mean, here we are coming up on the 10th year shortly, and we thought at that point when we met that we were definitely going to, I think we've made a dent. And I say that until the pandemic hit, but I think it's increased during that pandemic, but I agree. I think they were all types of folks that came to the Carter Center in regards of, and I say all types of folks, you know, different denominations of faith, different political views, but we all came together on the one issue, and that was to fight the sex trafficking. And that was important to her. It was important to her for lots of reasons, but, you know, number one was the family unit that was destroyed, and then what happened to the to the women and the children that were involved.
Well, Pam, I know, I just appreciate you coming on this morning, and we're going to go to a break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk to Eric Bauer, attorney Eric Bauer, who fought the Backpage case. We just concluded that federal case here, and 84 issues were not resolved in a mistrial. Only one issue was convicted, so that's going to continue. So as you know, this work continues, and I'm grateful to have a fighter like you side by side to take on these issues and to have these shared memories. And I really appreciate you taking the time, and happy Thanksgiving, my friend.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. Just keep our family and your prayers. I know everyone is hurting in planes just from the loss that was there. And of course, you know, President Carter is not doing well after losing his companion of 76 years. And, you know, his comments, quote unquote, that Rosalind was my equal partner in everything I ever accomplished. Mm-hmm. And that she gave him the wise guidance and encouragement when he needed it.
Yes.
So as long as she was around and, you know, in the world, he always knew that somebody loved and supported him. So I know that his heart hurts.
Yes.
And, you know,
And he's 99. He's older, a couple years older. So
He's 99 years old. The funeral for her is next week, and I don't know. You know if we'll have two, but as that goes with couples that have been together for so long,
right?
So definitely keep their family in your prayers.
Absolutely, we will, and we'll keep your family in our prayers too. Have a blessed day, hon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You too. Bye bye.
This is Kathleen Wynn. This is Wynn Tucson. We're going to take a short break on 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. And we come back, we're going to do a court ruling that happened on Friday. It's been a busy 3 days and we weren't even here. Stay with us. Welcome back to Wynn Tucson. This is Kathleen Wynn, and I'm now joined by my good friend Eric Bauer, who has been on the Back Page case since the very beginning. So Eric, welcome to Wynn Tucson.
Well, good morning, Kathleen. It's good to be here again.
Yeah, so happy to have you back. So there was a ruling on Friday. Backpage founder, 84 counts. He was only convicted of one count of money laundering, or 85 counts, actually. And then the jury deadlocks on 84 other counts. So the judge declared a mistrial, and they had deliberated for 6 days. It marked the second time that a mistrial has been declared in this case against the site's co-founder. So that was in 2021 when another judge concluded prosecutors had too many references to child sex trafficking in a case where no one faced such a charge. But unfortunately, the only count that he was found guilty of is the money laundering. So I called you over the weekend, which, we talk about other things, but unfortunately, this is something that we've both worked on for a long time, and you started this. Many of your victims have received remedies for their for the crimes that were committed against them. But what do you think happens from here? Does this government have the political will to go after this man?
Well, the government may have the political will to do that. There was a tremendous amount of Backpage money that was seized by the
yes.
federal authority. I mean, somewhere between 200 and 500 million. I'm a little confused on exactly what the dollar figures are. I just really rely on different news accounts. But the Fed seized a bunch of money, and that money is subject to criminal forfeiture. So I don't know where this all plays out in terms of, you know, there's a conviction on one count, so is the money associated with that count the only money that can be seized now, or can the whole 200 million be seized? I don't know. These are all questions that will be decided later on. What's kind of interesting is the corporation Backpage and a bunch of associated legal corporate entities, you know, different LLCs, they pled guilty.
Yes.
Early on to different, well, actually, conspiracy to promote sex trafficking, I think, was the actual charge.
Well, and the chief financial officer, John Brunst, was convicted of one count of conspiracy to violate the Travel Act, a federal law barring the use of interstate commerce to facilitate prostitution in violation of state laws, and more than 30 money laundering counts. So money laundering appears to be the thing that they has any teeth, or that has had teeth up until this point. And executive vice president also convicted on the conspiracy to violate the Travel Act, more than a dozen counts of facilitation of prostitution, and about 20 money laundering counts. So the money laundering is facilitation of prostitution and money laundering is what they've gotten them on so far. And they said that authorities said they generated $500 million in prostitution-related revenue, to your point, from its inception in 2004 until 2018, when it was shut down by the government April 6, 2018, in case anyone needs to remember. And prosecutors have argued that Backpage operators ignored warnings to stop running prostitution ads. It says some involving children, but as we know, many involving children. And you had how many cases? You had over 20 cases at one time, right?
Well, yeah, we had a lot of cases. For sure, the ones that we concluded, we only had three that settled prior to trial. And the reason for that was once the criminal charges were filed against Backpage, the law requires that any pending cases be stayed, which means frozen in limbo until the criminal trial is done and over with. And that really does include the sentencing, which still hasn't even happened yet. So these kids that have been waiting for their day in court have just been struggling to, survive with the mental illness that goes along with being raped. being sold to be raped, you know.
Repeatedly.
Hundreds of times, some thousands of times for some kids. You know, it's really a pretty ugly situation, no matter which way you look at it.
Yeah, and as you know, one of the owners committed suicide. I think I had you on when that happened. And when we were talking yesterday, there was this thought that when he commits suicide, since he's gone, that all the crimes he committed don't go get passed on to the heirs. So this money that's sitting there that the federal government has seized and is holding, do his heirs get his share? That just makes me crazy.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it's a very good question, but the current case law seems to indicate that those funds are no longer subject to forfeiture. Because he was not convicted, because he was dead, that the money cannot be forfeited. There is case law that essentially holds that is the way it is. So unless there are some exceptions, and that would only be his share of the money, of course.
Right.
The other money, who knows? And I'm not sure what the interest, the exact shares of the corporation, how all that works. I mean, those are documents we don't have access to. So, you know, there are a lot of pending lawsuits over who gets what.
Right.
Standing. And, hey, it's a big legal mess at this point.
It is. Well, and unfortunately, to your prior point, that so many victims had cases against Backpage once you settled with yours. And there were cases where, the mom out of Chicago whose daughter was murdered. I don't even know that. Did that ever get settled also?
Not that I'm aware of. No, it did not. I believe that was frozen as well. And
they convicted the murderer. I think that happened. But she didn't get any remedies from the Backpage.com. And so there's none of these stories are good stories. There's so many victims. And this was for greed and for profit and for power, with no regard for the lives of the children that they were impacting and the families that they impacted as a result of these kids being sold on a list. You also went after Craigslist, did you not?
That's true. We went after Craigslist and we settled that case a little over a year ago.
And when you went after them, you were successful in that you got them to stop selling human beings online, correct?
Well, that happened before we actually even filed the lawsuit. The legislation that I was part of, that you were part of, that so many people fought for,
yes,
the FOSTA legislation, I think that, and it was signed into law by President Trump, that had a major impact on a lot of online selling of humans, including children, especially children. And at that point, Craigslist got completely out of what they termed their personal ad section. And there was a lot of human trafficking that occurred on that within those different categories in that section of their online presence.
Well, and yet, as we know, when something goes away, there's this gap or this void, and it seems like other bad actors run into the space. So are children still being sold online?
Oh, absolutely. And we need some legislation to, you know, stop that. A lot of sites are currently being run overseas where we really don't have, you know, jurisdiction over people in North Korea or Russia or wherever, but it is the World Wide Web. So all they really need is a server to access American pedophiles and run ads that the pimps put on those sites. So what we need is some legislation that allows us to essentially hack into those sites and just stop them. Stop them right at the, you know, digital border coming into the United States. I mean, we invented the internet. We should be able to control at least that aspect of it.
And if we find that a foreign government is facilitating this, we have laws against facilitation. How is there a international court that would, is there a way to prosecute people that are causing harm to our children in this country? Is there a legal mechanism right now, or does a new law need to be passed?
There may be some legal mechanisms, but they don't have any teeth. Mm. You know, there's no realistic enforcement. And when people are beyond the reach of our law enforcement officers, they're beyond the reach of the courts in terms of effective remedies.
So many of these now, so where do you think the sites are, or do you know where sites are that are, you said Russia is, are there, you said North Korea, China by any chance?
Yeah. For sure there's Mexico, there are, they're kind of all over the place, really. And there's actually sites in Australia, there's sites in Canada,
yeah.
Yeah.
So,
sure.
Well, we know yeah. Pornhub's in Canada, correct?
Well, you bet. That's a huge site. They have, Canada's a lot easier to access legally. I mean, their justice system's pretty similar to ours. And in some ways, it's better in Canada. They don't have CDA 230, which is a immunity statute that we have in the United States. But, you know, there's difficulties no matter where you go. And again, I think we need legislation that allows us to target overseas companies that are sex trafficking minors in our country, that are running those ads. Just target them, hack them, prevent them from doing it. I mean, we have the cyber tools to do it. Let's use them.
Absolutely. And, you know, you have drugs coming into this country that are killing our citizens. So between the drugs and the trafficking, it seems to me there's a concerted effort to harm Americans and harm our children. And it's focused on our younger generation. And so, I think enforcement of current laws, I think shutting the border, all of those things could help make our country safer, but definitely safer for our children. So final thoughts on this back page. Do you want to bet that they retry or try to get these 84 counts that were deadlocked by the jury?
I'm thinking, who knows, really? I mean, there's enough money at stake, and I think a lot of that will depend on the state of the forfeiture. All that money that is subject to forfeiture, you know, if the government can gain an advantage by retrying, you know, the counts that were deadlocked, if they can gain an advantage to get that money that they have seized, then I think they'll go ahead and do it. It's a whole lot of money.
Well, and they argued, I think, in the very beginning that the money that was taken, it was wrongfully taken, or that it shouldn't have been forfeited. I've not lost one ounce of sleep, one night of sleep, over the fact that they seized all those assets. I thought that was a good part of this case happening here in Arizona, because of our forfeiture laws. But then when the feds took over this case, I think it was the Department of Justice, they had a right to do that. And I just feel sad that all these other victims haven't had access to those funds because they helped create those profits, with horrific situations, and no one should be rewarded for what happened to the victims of the Backpage.com.
And that's very true. And, you know, and just real quick to that point, early on, there was a lot of indication from the government, from the federal government, that any funds that were successfully forfeited would be used to set up a victims crime fund for the people that were victims of Backpage. And that would be great if that actually.
Absolutely. Well, have a fabulous Thanksgiving, my friend. Thank you for always being available and for continuing to fight and go out and make it a great day. And I appreciate your time.
Well, and thank you, Kathleen. Thanks for your continuing fight for justice in Arizona.
Thank you.
Take care.
You too. All right, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow. It's going to be Law Enforcement Day. I'm going to bring in some people that want to be your next sheriffs all over the state. Have a great day. This has been Kathleen Wynn, Wynn Tucson, on 1030 The Voice.